Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Our guest this evening is Daniel Cooper. Daniel has created a very interesting framework, a kind of a criteria for determining the validity of extraterrestrial contact. He came up with it before he was ever aware of the Meyer material, and what's very interesting about this framework of his is it fits the Meyer case absolutely perfectly. I'm not sure how much we're going to talk about his framework tonight, though. I think I'm going to talk a little bit, or probably more, a whole lot more about the universal prophet, the Nicodemian lineage that we started on last night. Let me go ahead and bring Daniel on the air here and see how he's doing this evening. Daniel, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Quite good. How are things in Canada?
Oh, not too bad. Getting a little chillier now, finally. So I guess still not holding up to usual winter standards, but at least we have minus numbers now instead of melting snow. So so that's good. Yeah, how are things with you?
Oh, they're superb. You are way up north, right?
Yes, up just near Alaska, actually. So.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Have you? It's about an hour drive from here. So.
Have you ever been to Alaska?
Oh, many times. Yes.
Oh,
really? We do it as a day trip here. So it's just something we just kind of do once in a while. So. I guess they have all of the access to the waterfront there with the ocean and stuff. So unless you want to go to Vancouver, which is, 2,000 kilometers away or 2,500 kilometers away. I don't know. Long ways. So
incredible. Yeah. How big that is. I have a guest. I have a guest, Henry Kroll, who is from Alaska up there. And I've interviewed him for years. And cool. He really likes it up there as well.
Yeah, it has advantages. Sorry?
Has it advantages and disadvantages, like everything else. Now, how cold will it get up where you are this winter?
My personal record when I was growing up, this was in, I think, grade 6 when I was 11 or 12. I must have been 12. It was minus 58 Celsius, so that's really cold. So I guess minus 40 Fahrenheit and minus 40 Celsius is where they meet up. And then after that, it changes. So, yeah. So, anyway.
That's crazy. That's actually crazy.
Yeah. It's chilly.
Well, let me start out. Let me dive into this universal prophet material, the Nicodemian lineage. This, to me, I don't know. I get real excited about this information. I don't know if you've seen the PDF that shows this lineage. I'll go ahead and put that in the chat room again for anyone there that wants to see it. It's pretty amazing stuff. Now, I can see why skeptics, this would really trigger a skeptic, because first of all, Billy's saying he's the universal prophet, which sounds, from one way of looking at it, incredibly arrogant or prideful, but it doesn't strike me that way at all. But let me continue here. Every universe brings forth a universal prophet who will repeatedly materialize again and again as a human being. And the purpose of the universal prophet is to help speed up our evolution. And the first individual named in this lineage, and I don't think this is the complete lineage, but the first one is Nicodemian, who was born about 9.6 billion years ago, sometimes called the unblemished or the precious one. 9.6 billion years ago is a long time ago. That's before there was an Earth, probably even before our star completely formed. I'm guessing that Nocodemian was probably from the Lyra Vega system, and even probably earlier from the Lyran galaxy. And what we have here is a spirit form that's very, very ancient. And that is very, very important. Now, just a kind of quick refresher to anyone that might be listening to this archive a little later and not that familiar with the Meyer case. We all have what's called a spirit form, or a Geist form in the German, and it resides in the middle of our brains in an area called the superior colliculus, and that's where the eye gazes. And a spiritual consciousness, when it comes in 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and it also brings with it a new material consciousness. So a human being consists of a material consciousness, which is new with each reincarnation, and a spiritual consciousness, which benefits from each reincarnation. The spirit form, it needs the material consciousness and the material life in order to evolve. So what we have here in my notes here, and we have the whole or a good portion of the lineage of Edward Albert Meyer, the same spirit form. The next incarnation was about 8 billion years ago of a man named Henoch, and the Henoch is spelled with a K. He was called the wise man of time, the initiate. Now, Henoch and Nocodemian were incarnated prior to the Earth on other galaxies, on other worlds, and probably even different space-time configurations. Now, the next incarnation is of an individual called Semyasa. And Semyasa was here during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. He was a scientist who worked under Eris the Barbarian, and he fathered Adam about 13,035 years ago. And if you're interested in learning more about this, you can find it in Contact Report 9. Semyasa was one of the 200 leaders and sub-leaders that worked under Eris the Barbarian, and he mated with what was called an Eva. And Eva is a female human being, a kind of leftover in this case, because the people from Lyra Vega were here before the Atlantis and Lemurian civilization started. And those people, some of those people, you know, they go back 389,000 years ago. Some of those people committed certain violations, like some of them raped and abused the Earth people. Some of them had sex with the Earth people, who were at a completely lower level of evolvement. And as a punishment, these Lyrians took all the technology away from these people, and they left them stranded on Earth. So these people that had very much older spirit forms, who had been in societies that were very advanced, who had lived with technology, now were forced to struggle to survive. And I've always thought, Daniel, that would be an incredible punishment that, you know, went multiple lifetimes long. Have you ever thought about that?
Of course. I never thought of it as in terms of all the history when I was thinking about it growing up, but certainly didn't dawn on me that I would ever want to be born on this planet, so that's for sure. I just couldn't come to terms with that, I guess. And in many ways, and I suppose many smart kids, you know, who have considerable abilities in mathematics or whatever it might be, look at our world and think, oh my gosh, I don't think I would want to be here if it was up to me. So, you know, so we just have to make the most of what we have and go along with it, right?
It's interesting to me that you felt this way from a very, very young age, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most of us do in many ways. I don't know. I assumed that many people did at the time. So, maybe it was just in my head, but I don't know. It seems a lot of people are certainly struggling, that's for sure, trying to make sense of our materialism and our greed and all the stuff that's just totally destroying everything, right? So,
exactly. Now, the Meyer material also talks about the seven prophets, and usually they list them as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad. And one of the things that's brought out in this lineage here is that the Enoch was actually pronounced Henoch, and it was actually three people. Henoch the first, who was born 13,500 years ago, Henoch the second, born about 9,300 years ago, and Henoch the third was born about, 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. And then you have the names of the people that we have heard in the Old Testament, which would be Elijah, Isaiah, and Jeremiah. And these names would have been pronounced differently at the time. For example, Isaiah was known as the one with creational healing or the one with Ishwish healing. Eliah or Elijah was known as a lover of creation. He was also sometimes called JHWH or Ishwish is my teacher. His disciple was also called Elgis or Elias and is mentioned in the Talmud of Emmanuel. Now, Jeremiah, who was born about 662 BC, was known as the one raised by the gods. And then we have additional, again, I'm mentioning the material lifetimes of the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer. The next one mentioned in the lineage is Socrates, who was born in Athens, about 469 BC, I believe. Aristotle, who was born 384 BC. And then the next incarnation was Emmanuel, the one with divine knowledge, the one with Ishwish knowledge. Unfortunately, he's called Jesus today. And the Meyer material says that the New Testament has been highly distorted. Daniel, can you comment on Emmanuel, the New Testament, or any of these other incarnations that you found interesting?
Well, I guess it was something that I kind of thought about when I was young, that the Bible in itself had a lot of contradictions, and I know that it upsets a lot of people, but I don't know, we're living in a different time. It's we know about science and things now, so I guess they didn't have that stuff when they were writing these books, and certainly when they were being rewritten by other human beings at later times after his death. And so certainly people who would be interested in controlling others and trying to get money or whatever it might be from, you know, a big crowd of people like we do with governments and so on and so forth and churches, and would certainly have an interest in spreading information that isn't exactly useful in the terms of using your own thoughts and your own observations of what you see and all this kind of stuff, instead putting it outside of yourself and always saying that, well, you know, it's something else outside of me that dictates my life and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I certainly didn't have any trouble with that explanation, because with Emmanuel versus, you know, aka Jesus, whatever, mm-hmm. that came later on, and so that wasn't a surprise to me at all. And actually, I find it quite interesting, just with the name Emmanuel on its own, just the way how sounds actually impact our subconscious and so forth. I'm a musician and so on too, and So this is something I've thought lots about too. But you know, you can't use the name Emmanuel as a swear word. It just doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Whereas with
Jesus Christ, you can use it really well. It works great, you know. And so when they talk about it in the Meyer material as being Jesus Christ being a name that actually has a very negative effect on the subconscious, I can totally see how that would make sense, you know. It was resulting from some ancient cult, right? Of human sacrifice.
It sounds kind of harsh. It strikes me as sounding harsh. Does it strike you that way too?
For sure. Yeah. No kidding. It seems very easy to use when you're very angry. Whereas Emmanuel, you know, you just, yeah. Anyway, so that was one little thing based on Meyer's stuff. I was thinking about other things before I ever got into Meyer's stuff, but before that. So for me, that was certainly no surprise at all. That it would be falsified and, you know, and so on and so forth throughout time for control and for power and all this kind of accumulation of wealth by people in power and so forth. So it's really easy to make it's really easy to be in power over people who are ignorant. So I guess that's why they start the Bible with, you know, the tree of knowledge is bad and all this kind of stuff and on. So just it just doesn't make any sense if you're really interested in thinking about things. But anyway, yeah. Again, if they really wanted to give us super good knowledge, you know, tell us to boil water, you know, to kill germs, that would be great. So something that everyone could have done at the time and would have saved many lives for sure and improved the quality of life of many, many people. I guess I was watching a TV show, QI, with Stephen Fry and so on. They talk about all these kinds of things, and I guess not these things, but I mean just talk about interesting things. That's why QI is quite interesting is what they mean. And they were talking about how the British, I guess, how did it go exactly? I guess they were talking about how just the making of tea really... the proliferation of tea and so on in the British public actually really, really helped to alleviate many of the sicknesses and so on in their history, because of course you have to boil water, right? So anyway, so it's just these really simple brain dead things that, you know, they could have maybe added if it was really from God or all this kind of stuff, quote unquote. Anyway, so if it really was so knowledgeable about the universe, that would have been a good start, I think. That's just my opinion, but anyway, yeah. So as for some of the later personalities like Galileo and Mozart and so on, I actually did ask Billy about that this summer when I was there, especially about Mozart, because I wasn't too sure about
really?
That one. And yeah, and he said, yeah, no, that's true, and that's right. And I thought, okay, that's interesting, because I actually did find pictures and so forth, you know, how the faces and so on can sort of be very similar from lifetime to lifetime. And so I was looking for pictures of Galileo. You know, I was looking for pictures of Galileo and Mozart, and of course they were just paintings, but and Rasputin, and of course Billy and so on. And so it's pretty amazing the stunning, you know, similarities. And I even found a paper about Mozart, and his eyes apparently were very very, very striking and so on. So I guess it was some paper that was written somewhere, or I don't remember if it was a university thing or not, but anyway, yeah, it's all pretty interesting. And so actually
I didn't mean to interrupt you, finish your thought.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was just with another picture of Rasputin. I was looking at just on Google, and underneath it, there was somebody had written in pencil, I guess, on the picture that his eyes were extremely hypnotizing or very, very, very strong. Like, he would look right through you, that kind of thing. And I guess somebody had scanned the picture and that was on it and so on. And I looked at it and yeah, it looks exactly like Billy's stare, that I don't know, that's that signature stare that I've never seen with anybody else. And it's very interesting how that works out. So I'm not altogether surprised, that's for certain, about all these personalities. It's, you know, Mozart was an unbelievable genius, and to be able to do what he did in such a short lifetime too, and starting so young and so on too. Like, I'm a musician, so I can really, 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 really appreciate just the enormity of what he did, and it's just unbelievable. So it's pretty amazing, and so to be able to have that amount of innate wisdom and so forth just on one given subject like that, I mean, that's just, you know, it's so young, you know, before ever going through university or any of that stuff. I mean, that's, I'm not sure if they had those back then, but still amazing. I mean, absolutely incredible. When he was 5 years old, he was already composing, you know, big, you know, whatever the word is, pieces of music. So, so yeah, I mean, it really is not surprising. And I think music is actually so important for our development as well. And, to live a lifetime just dedicated completely to music, you know, at that time, really opened the door, I think, for many, many other branches in music to grow and to expand and flourish, you know. So I think he really broke a lot of ground there that really opened up a lot of possibilities for us in that respect too. So that's it, yeah, it's incredible. It's pretty neat. And of course, before I ever started the calculations, when I was a little kid, I was really interested in Galileo. So for me, I was really interested in finding someone like Galileo in this lifetime, you know, and that's not something that you can just do by watching the news, you know, because just like back in the day when Galileo was alive, you know, you wouldn't just be able to pick up, you know, whatever they had in terms of news sharing at that time. You wouldn't be able to find, you know, neutral information in that respect. So a lot of it would probably be tainted by the church or, you know, whatever it might be. So it's really up to each individual to think for himself. And I think that's the biggest lesson and turning point, I think, in our history. And I think that really, really, really laid down the foundation to make these contacts today possible. So since everyone now can read and write, everyone has, you know, basic, at least in non-developing nations, a basic understanding of science and reading and writing and mathematics and so on at a high school stage. And so it just made it possible to break away from that monopoly that the Catholic Church was creating in terms of what information would get disseminated, right? So, so that's huge.
One of the things I've learned within the past year or two, which I've had a huge impact on me, I was very slow to pick up on the Emmanuel material. It's probably because of my religious upbringing. So I kind of went out and tried to find some proof outside of the Meyer material that the person that we call Christ was actually named Emmanuel. And I didn't actually find that. But what I found out was almost more interesting, because I found that the only language in the ancient world that had the letter J was the Lyrian language. The Hebrew, the Greek, the Aramaic didn't have the letter J. The English, the German, none of our languages had the letter J in it, which is astonishing. So all the people in the New and the Old Testament today, all those individuals who have the letter J in their name, that was inserted later. And I have a link that people can see, and maybe I'll throw that in the chat room later. It's a 1611, a true from 1611 version of the King James. You know, you can buy those that say the authorized 1611 version, but if you get a truly ancient Bible, you know, from 1611, it will say the New Testament of our Lord and Savior, IESVS Christ. And that's what he was called in the Greek and the Latin. they use the letter I, I-E-S-V-S or I-E-S-U-S, and it was pronounced Jesus with a Y. Now, there was a guy named Gian Giorgio Torisno in about 1500, 1550, who invented the letter J, and he may have been one of the ones that started to do the substitutions. But before then, the book of Job was the book of IOB. James and John's names are unpronounceable. I think I might have them written down here somewhere. Maybe I'll try to say them again if I come across it in my notes. But in the Old English, there was no letter J. There was an A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, no U, V, no W, X, Y, Z, and then a couple other letters that we don't use anymore. There was no W, there was no J, there was no U in the Old English. And anyone can verify this for yourself. How that ever, we all should know that. You know what I'm saying? That should be common knowledge, right?
And yeah, we think of
the Bible as being, at least I always did, as being the Word of God. But if it was so written in stone, why would they go back and change, for example, the names of James and John? James's real name is spelled Y-A-A-Q-O-V. Yaakov, I would just guess. John's real name was spelled Y-A-H-U-C-H-A-N-O-N. I guess it was too hard for them to say, too. So they had to create a new name. But, yeah, I've done shows on that. So I don't know, you hadn't heard that before, Michael or Daniel?
No, I haven't. That's very interesting. Yeah, I'm just as ignorant as many people on many subjects, and I like it that way. I like to keep learning. So yeah, that's interesting.
Have you ever studied the Council of Nicaea at all?
Never heard of it. No.
Well, we'll have to do a show on that sometime. That is a very, very interesting thing as well. And that's related to the name of the person that we call Jesus Christ today as well, where right. The name came from. You know, I found it really interesting what you were saying about the name Emmanuel. It sounds comforting, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forget what it means in the Book of Names, but I guess it certainly has a nice flow to it compared to Jesus Christ. So it's and I guess actually, you know what? I was thinking too when you were mentioning all this stuff about the J's and the letter J and so on. Have you ever watched that documentary? I don't know if it was on BBC or not, but it was about actually how Jesus, or AKA whatever Jesus, lived and actually went to India after he was nailed up on the cross and so on. And I wonder, have you seen that?
I have seen that. And I had a fellow on
ahead.
The show that's written a couple books about that.
Oh, right on. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it is pretty interesting. I certainly did enjoy that. And, I mean, I wouldn't say it's all, you know, completely factual in every sense, but I mean, it certainly gets people thinking because, yeah, certainly there was somebody going around all these different, I guess, I don't know if it was Buddhist temples and so on, but at the time, but, cause I don't know the time period of Buddha exactly, but I know there were many, many temples around the Middle East and so on, and in the Far East, I think even as well in Tibet and so on, wasn't it? That this guy had gone through and was a teacher, and I guess they called him Issa or something. So it was kind of a nickname for him. So yeah, I always found that pretty interesting.
Didn't after the cross, according to my information, doesn't the Talmud say he did go into India after the cross?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, I guess he had kids and a family and everything there, a wife, and lived to the ripe old age of 115 or something, so I don't know. But it's interesting. So it certainly bears out what some of these other findings, you know, these sort of non-Christian findings are finding out about, you know, about this character that was living at that time and teaching. I found it interesting to explore other things. Sorry, go ahead.
One of the next incarnation of the Meyer spirit form is said to be Muhammad, who's called the Praised One. That was 571 AD. Mm-hmm. I have not studied Muhammad much in the Meyer material, but I had some links that I've lost. There are some contact reports on Muhammad. Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, but my memory is, I have to read things more than once or twice to really get a solid grasp of, you know, all the information. But it's something I do want to study a bit more about, and it does interest me actually a fair amount considering what's going on in our world today. With all of this demonizing of Islam and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, probably. Whatever, maybe I won't go into that, but it's certainly something that, you know, it's worth considering in many respects, but I don't want to, you know, demonize anybody, and I think, you know, obviously there are, most of them are the Muslims are wonderful, peace-loving people and so on and so forth too, and so you know, a lot of the demonizing, I think a lot of it comes from the West in many respects too, and so forth, and is kind of put on steroids, I guess, through the media and so forth. Not to say that all of it is positive, but you can certainly see my ignorance on the subject is more than what it should be for this particular conversation, especially on the radio. So something I would certainly want to study more about.
Are you currently studying German?
Yes. Yeah, I was working on that today a little bit. And are you as well?
No, I was. I've really slacked off. When you were last time over in Switzerland, you had to speak to Billy in German, correct?
Yes. I could see that he wasn't really interested in talking in English, and certainly Jacobus wasn't interested in talking in English either. He didn't speak any English anyway. And so when I had conversations with them, I would just try my hardest actually to speak in German. When I was on the phone one time before I came to the center, I called and actually Billy answered the phone and I was trying to speak in German and I just started laughing and he started laughing and we just had a good moment there. So it was kind of funny. Cause I was just making such a hash of it, but it certainly improved over the last year, and they were quite pleased with how much it had improved as well. So that was nice, I guess. But Billy did revert a little bit into English as well, seeing how much I was, you know, trying hard to really learn and to work on German and so forth. But it's not something that he would normally go into, and for certainly with subjects on the spirit teaching and all that kind of stuff, he would certainly never, I don't think, would go into English. So we were just mostly talking about cowboy music and, you know, stuff like that and ranching
music.
And yeah. Well, I brought this CD along that I grew up listening to, and my dad really enjoyed too. It was with Roy Rogers and all these guys. I don't know if you know the Sons of the Pioneers, but it's very harmonious and beautiful harmonies and beautiful melodies and nice lyrics and so on. It's very enjoyable music. So I brought that CD along. I thought he might enjoy that. And so we talked a little bit about this and that. And so, yeah, it's just because, of course, where I grew up, you know, it's sort of what people are into. So
did Billy listen to that CD or did Jacobus?
I brought it over to Billy, something that I thought maybe he would enjoy, and so yeah. But actually, I remember when we were talking on one of our last radio interviews, you were asking me if Jacobus had spoken anything about you know, his experiences with UFOs and things, and I just kind of jumped into some other subjects, you know. But yeah, I did ask him a little bit about that, and certainly he's seen a lot of things. And and that was this last time I went. We were driving back from somewhere. I don't remember what the names of the towns are around there, but but I got to ask him a few questions about this and that, and certainly he's seen many, many interesting things. So yeah. So he's been there since before they came public, I think, since 19. Or I think he knew Billy or something since the early 1970s. So,
oh, yeah. Didn't,
yeah.
Was it Jacobus that walked in on Billy and Semyasi?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Oh. And you're familiar with that? No, I'm sure
yes,
you didn't.
Yes, I am.
You're familiar with that whole story, though, with what happened,
Yes. At least to my limited knowledge, yes. Yeah, so it's I guess he must have felt bad, but oh well, you know, things happen. So it's not something that I don't think he could be blamed for necessarily. And he's a really, really nice guy, and really means well and everything. So I my hat's off to him. I think he's a great guy. So we have
that
in my he's very patient with my German too. So that's very nice.
You know, it would be interesting to talk to him about that. I mean, although I'm sure it's probably something he doesn't like to talk about. And for people that are listening that aren't familiar with what we're discussing, I guess it was Jacobus that walked in on Billy and Semyasi. The Pleiaren are very sensitive to our vibrations, our thought vibrations, and it has a tremendously negative impact on them. It causes them to, like, lose control of their bodies. And Semyasi ended up falling down and hitting her head on a table. And one way or another, she got transported back to her ship shortly thereafterwards. But she was severely injured over that. And that was the injury that really cut short Billy's contacts with Semyasi. She ended up having to go, I guess, into the Tao universe to actually get serious treatment. And she won't even be back normal for like another 70 years or something to that effect, starting at that time, mm-hmm. which I guess was in 84. I can't remember the exact date. I have to look it up. But that's kind of scary. I mean, if you think about, I mean, it's so obvious why they don't want open contact with us, right?
Yeah, well, that and all the obvious reasons of our insanity, you know, in terms of our power structures, who would just want their ship and stuff instead of actually wanting to learn something from them, you know. So, of mm-hmm. course, our militaries and so on are always so hell-bent on wanting to boost their advantages and so forth, and there's very little interest in actual consciousness evolution. So I think, yes, the reasons are manifold, and yeah, I think it was Robin Foley that from Australia that was at the center too, and she woke up from her sleep needing to throw up right away or whatever, and I guess I don't know if it was I don't know who it was that walked by, but it was one of Billy's contactors as well, and all of a sudden she smelled this really sweet smell. I guess it was like some sort of a, you know, hope you feel better kind of thing, and all of a sudden, yeah, it just kind of came out of the air, and she had a really difficult time describing. I don't remember how she described it, but it, yeah, similar kind of experience, I guess. So, yeah.
Wow.
She told me all about that, and I guess she wrote about it. And
what was her name?
Robina Foley, I guess. I'm not sure if she goes under the name of Robina or Robin now, but
is she the lady that translated the stuff on the love and the spiritual teachings? I love that. I mean, I think that's great stuff. Robin Foley?
Yeah, she does a lot of that. And for sure. It's she's been doing that for a long time. And I guess she helped with some of the books that they published as well in Australia and so forth, and in English. And So, but anyway, it's just a little corroboration of that experience, I guess, from her
now
from her own experience.
She's from Australia, and she was also visiting the center in Switzerland, right?
Yeah. I guess it was a few years ago, so must have been a while ago. It was before I went, I think. So, at least a year.
How many trips have you made at this point?
I think about five now. One time I went to Switzerland, I actually didn't go to the center, but I, that was because I went twice in one summer. So I went back because I was in Europe for a while. So,
wow.
So yeah, I went first time just to check it out, just for 3 days, and you know, just to kind of say hi and work a little bit, and then the next time I went for another 3 days or 4 days, and then I went for a week and a half the next time, and so on and so forth. I don't know. I can't remember exactly all the details, but yeah, it just kind of all goes together over the years. So, yeah, first time in 2016.
And you saw a ship when you were in Switzerland, right?
Yeah, just this last time. Well, at least the reflection of the ship. I guess it wasn't the ship itself. You get to see interesting things when you're around there, of course. It's if you keep your eye on the sky, you know, that kind of stuff. And so this time I had the opportunity to take pictures, so that was very fun indeed. Billy was quite happy with that too, so, and everyone else had a good time that evening. And I didn't quite realize, you know, I didn't think it would have any impact. Of course, you know, we're in the digital age now, so it's not really the same as when Billy took his pictures with his film photography, you know. It's anyway, it was fun, and it certainly corroborated one of his old contacts from 1983 with I guess there was two contacts. There was one where he described it as being all the colors of the rainbow, and then there was another one where he described it as being like an intense light pink nebula kind of thing. And and so that's what I got to take a picture, was that intense, constantly changing, intensely pink, constantly changing nebula shape thing. I don't know. And every second it was a different shape to the naked eye. And then I started taking pictures, and you can see every picture is completely different from the other one. And I guess the ship is many kilometers away, and it sort of projects an image of itself so that they're sort of protecting their you know, location and so on, and what they look like. And then if the military wants to go and chase their ships, then they can go and feel free to do that. It doesn't really bother them. They can keep doing their work. So yeah, it was just over the center. And I was just walking outside, and I looked up between the two trees, and there it was. So yeah, it's just... it was almost stationary, and then it would move very, very slowly, and then it would stop, and then it just kept changing shape constantly and so on too. So, yeah. So, I should send you those pictures. I guess the Canada newsletter, the FIGU newsletter, they just published something about that with my pictures in it too. So,
no kidding.
People want to see them. Yeah. So if people want to see them, I guess they can have a look at that. So yeah, it's on the FIGU Canada website. So. Their official website. So,
do you have any desire to have your own website?
Not really. I don't have any reason to. I mean, you know, FIGU already has its platform and stuff, and if I really need to publish anything, you know, useful in that regard, then like the calculations, for example, then I'll use what they already have, and they're quite happy to publish that on their own. So I don't see any reason for me to get into that necessarily. It's not really my strength. Mm-hmm. I'm not into computers very much, so
Oh really?
It's taken me like 2 years. Sure. Yeah, no, it's taken me like 2 or 3 years just to learn how to use my basic recording program. So I'm not really I'm not a genius when it comes to that stuff at all. So so just building a website is
too much work.
Go ahead. Yeah, for sure. So,
and
there's just no reason for it. So, go ahead.
Are you recording? You're recording right now the saxophone stuff?
Yeah, just some stuff that I've been working on and trying at home and so on and so forth. So nothing big and fancy, but it's just kind of fun, you know, sort of spiritual music, I guess you could call it. I don't know. It ends up sounding like kind of movie music in some respects, at least the stuff that I'm composing and so on. So, so that's fun. I just always thought that the world needed a bit more melodic music, so I thought, well, if I can contribute to that in any way in this lifetime, then that would be great. Thumbs up to that, yeah. So,
I think that there is a very strange trend towards disharmony in music, and it seems like it's getting worse, and I don't think it's by chance. I think it's by design. Of course, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but some of the...
That's an interesting word. Sorry, I'll stop you. Conspiracy. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know that word, conspiracy theorist, I think there was a Freedom of Information Act request or something where they found out where that word came from. It was actually the CIA that created that word to discredit people that were sort of not talking according to the official narratives. At the time, I guess it was in 1967 or something, they came up with that word. So just so you know.
So. People that think independently are conspiracy theorists nowadays.
Right. Yes, exactly.
And you know what Billy says about thinking independently, that thinking independently is like one of the very most important things to evolving your consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's exactly how the calculations, you know, came about for me. And I was on my own. So there was nobody there to tell me what to think. The people that were trying to tell me what to think were completely, you know, in my opinion, totally wrong on everything or almost everything. So I just had to make my own framework in that sense. So, yeah, it is up to everyone. And everyone has to think for themselves. There is no such thing as thinking for somebody else. Kind of like doing push-ups or eating, you know, you can't do that for somebody else either, so.
Right. So your framework predicted that the real ET contact would occur in Switzerland, that it would occur in the middle 1970s. What else am I leaving out here?
Well, I guess the end result is not as interesting as how I got to those conclusions. It's, you know, it's kind of like looking at the back of the math book. You're like, you're looking at all these answers, and well, that's great, but you know, how do you get there, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I talk about in the beginning of my calculations. It's, you know, the calculation came out those numbers and that place in Switzerland in 1975 came out at the end of. That was the end result of it all, right? So mm-hmm. It doesn't say anything to anybody if they don't understand how that process came about. Excuse me. And so it's kind of I don't know if you really want to go into that, you know, this show, but we can. I always, you know, it's just my strong point, unfortunately, you know, and it's just kind of where I come from, you know, because that's how I sort of see this case and how I saw it, you know, growing up and so forth too. Cause even when I was a little kid, you know, 7 years old, I kind of had an inclination that this thing was going on and so I just kind of started on that path. And, I was thinking about some stuff today and, I don't know. I was just kind of going through, have you ever seen this is a totally different subject. I'm sorry. But have you ever seen the TV show Fawlty Towers?
No.
With John Cleese and so on. It's from 1975, actually, come to think of it. I just realized that now. But I was watching that show, and it's actually a really, really well-known TV show for, it's like sort of one of those milestones in comedy, you know, that kind of thing, like Monty Python or, you know, whatever, all this kind of stuff. And I was just thinking about that today because I've been watching this show again recently, and it's such a negative show. Everything about it is about this guy who can't ever seem to get anything he wants in life, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I remember watching this show when I was particularly in a depressed state in my life. And, mm-hmm. You know, back early 20s, late teens mostly. That, you know, I found very interesting because I was looking for comedy as a way to sort of express myself against all the, you know, crap and pressures or whatever, you know, whatever was going through my head at the time in my life, going on in my life with, you know, just really ridiculous ideas that I was finding and so on and so forth. And comedy was kind of a way to sort of, you know, push back against that. But I just found it so dissatisfying in the end because these people, you know, you look at these people and not in real life, but I mean in these TV shows and the stories of it. And it's just so depressing, even though it's really funny. It's actually really depressing because it's just telling you that, you know, nothing ever goes the way you want it in life and it's all out of your hands anyways and all this kind of stuff. And I was thinking about that today. And I was like, man, I should not have been watching that show at the time because, you know, I was depressed. I was, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, why should I stick around for all this, what's going to be a crazy lifetime, you know, with this world going the way it is and all this kind of stuff at the time. So, and this was many, 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 many years ago. So I'm nowhere near that thought process anymore. But I just thought, imagine all the people that are actually going through these depressions or whatever and completely unable to cope with it because either they started taking drugs or they started, you know, just finding some way of not being able to process what is going on. And that they end up, a lot of people end up just looking for sort of the lighter side of life and the comedies and stuff like that. But I just find so much comedy is so completely destructive.
Empty.
In many. Yeah, very empty. Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite destructive in the sense that it always seems to be about, or in many cases, it seems to be about, you know, people who can't get their lives together and they just never do and never will. And that's the end of it, you know? And I don't know. I always wondered about that because I was actually at the time using this comedy as sort of a way to defend myself against all this kind of stuff. And I could see why it wasn't working because, you know, you learn things from what you watch. It's just normal. It's obvious. So you know,
I think it can be very destructive subconsciously, and unconsciously you absorb all that negativity and then it just resurfaces later.
Yeah, because you don't learn anything new. You don't learn anything how to process your what you're dealing with or anything. It's a good laugh maybe, but you still end up with the thought, well, you know, life is crap. So that's, you know, not a really good positive, useful direction. And I just find so much of the world is like that.
Now, you've read The Might of Thoughts, right?
Yes. Yes,
That's one of the most important books. And just this one little concept of always self-examining yourself to see if you're neutral.
Yes.
Look at yourself. Am I neutral positive? Am I neutral? And you'll find that 90% of the time when you're getting angry or depressed or even too ecstatic, you can say, wow, I'm not neutral right now. So let's get back to the middle ground here. And that little bit of advice is so huge. It's very simple, and the skill is being able to do it, right?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. You know, I was actually thinking. You know, kind of what some of the things we could talk about this for this show. And I was talking actually to a friend of mine, another friend in Australia, and he's always talking about, you know, the material in terms of, you know, what's going on in the world and all this kind of stuff. And he gets really depressed because,
sure,
yeah, he knows a lot of stuff that's going on in the world, but he's not really processing it in that respect either. And so because he's not finding that neutral ground, that neutral positive ground to really start from. And actually, as far as the meditation stuff goes, I really enjoyed actually one of the passages in The Way to Live. And so I actually wrote it down for myself and printed it out, and I have it on my wall here. And it's about meditation, and it's just, can I read it to you? Because it's...
Sure.
I just love it. It's from line 372. I don't know if there's chapters and stuff. I just wrote that down. Sorry. I didn't write the page number. I should have. But as you can see, I was just writing it for myself. So, but anyway, so I'll start. Yeah, the meditation is an extremely important factor in one's development for the purpose of evolution. Meditation is also very important for the creating of the psychical and consciousness-based balance, as well as for the well-being of the body. But a further foundation is also the integration of the meditation into the thinking and actions and into the entirety of everyday life. This is the purpose and sense of meditation. The meditation has become particularly significant, especially in the present time, and its integration in everyday life has become an indispensable necessity. That which expresses Dewalt and challenges of all kinds, as well as many-fold forms of enjoyments and diversions, more and more show how urgently necessary it has become to integrate the meditation into the life of the human being. Today, namely, everything is rushed and stressful, and there is hardly any real recuperation and equalizedness anymore. For a long time already, it has no longer been as it was in the past when everything was still handled calmly and with careful consideration. For this reason, the meditation is more urgently necessary today than ever before. But how can the human being now integrate the meditation into his or her everyday life? How can he/she permeatingly bring a quiet joy into the everyday life and allow generous equanimity of the meditation to be effective? Effectively, there is no special formula for that, and also no substitute for regular practice. And this practice is structured purely individually, so it is always subject to the choice of the individual meditator. But one thing is clearly certain. Only he/she who begins the genuine practice of meditations and carries it out unswervingly finds the real calm of the true nature of consciousness and of the inner self. And only he/she who practices the meditation unswervingly and again will uninterruptedly feel restful effect and attain... feel its restful and effect and attain the ability to incorporate into his or her everyday life and maintain all experiences which are collected through the meditation. Therefore, if the human being wants to achieve a real meditative success, then he/she must not carry out the practice of the meditation only as an occasional medicine or therapy, rather only as a duty which is necessary for life. So that's the end of the quote. But I find this to be more and more true for myself, and it's just, yeah, it's so profound. I just absolutely love that. So,
you know, that's a beautiful passage. Was that line 372 you said?
Yes, in The Way to Live. Yeah. So
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, it's wonderful because, you know, I keep finding myself kind of drifting away from meditation, you know, once in a while, and then I kind of get back into it for a while, and then the more I realize I do it, the more I realize, man, I should have been doing this all along, you know, and then I kind of stop again because I'm busy with stuff and whatever, and then I get back into it, and I'm like, man, why did I stop, you know, this is crazy, because it really helps me actually deal with things, you know. So
it's restful, like sometimes
it's restful, is, you know, exactly. We use these stresses in life as an excuse not to do it, but actually it kind of alleviates those stresses to begin with, so they're not as stressful. So it's just kind of like this self-fulfilling loop in either direction, whichever direction you really want to go. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating. So,
well, maybe next time we can talk about meditation more. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be great, because I think that's something that would be really worth exploring. For a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who listen to radio shows and stuff like that and on the Billy Meyer material are usually exposed to, you know, the doom and gloom and stuff like that, which is important. It's important to be neutral, but to be neutral positive also requires to look at the positives and the points that we have and the strength that we have in our own selves to deal with life and so on and so forth. In a way that makes just calmness and peace and so forth possibility, even in our crazy lives. And I think that's just probably one of the most important things that we can learn as a humanity at this point. And I think that's probably one of the main reasons, you know, why this mission is taking place, because it's teaching us the facets of our mind, you know, in terms of what is learning, you know, what is learning, how do we tap into, you know, the many facets of our mind to improve our learning, to improve our understanding, to improve our neutral approach to everything that we do, whether it be in music or driving or being a, you know, spaceman or kicking a soccer ball or whatever it might be, relationships or business, anything. And, you know, just finding that neutral ground. And I think, you know, once we realize that we can get peace within ourselves, then I think it just makes relationships so much easier too. And, you know, everything that we do is based in relationships. We have to deal with people wherever we are most of the time, and with projects and, you know, working life and all this kind of stuff that we do. So I think if there's anything to learn from these contacts, I think that meditation is the one thing that I was really most interested in finding. And I wanted to find stuff that was not going to, you know, screw me up too badly. So that's why, the framework, it really came in handy in that sense. So sort of a filter, just getting rid of all of the, you know, religious interests and all that stuff, the, you know, the Christianities and the whatever it might be, you know. I found even Buddhism has a lot of contradictions and stuff too that are worth examining, you know, for living a more practical life and so on. So those were some things that I was running into as well with other people. And they didn't find me very particularly interesting to be around because, you know, I wasn't interested in just sitting there vegetating, you know, like a vegetable. I was contemplating life. I really wanted to also deal with life, you know, and but to deal with it in a way that's neutral, positive. And so so not to escape life, not to leave life, you know, and leave one's responsibilities, but to actually take responsibility for it and to continue and deal with it and to continue to deal with it better and improve our ways of dealing with things. So I think that's huge. I think that's really huge. So yeah, it's something that interests me more and more.
Well, Daniel, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on meditation and your thoughts that come from The Way to Live. I love that book. And we'll talk again soon, sir. Have a great evening.
It always goes by so quickly.